Good day and a warm welcome to today's edition of Tech Central TCS Plus podcast. My name is Kevin Smith and I'm joined by Darren James. Darren, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, very well. Nice to be here. Great to nice talk to you. Here.
Good, good, good. Darren, before we jump into it, if I could ask you to just do a bit of an introduction of yourself. And if you could just give us a bit of a background of SpecOps.
All right. So for me, my name's Darren James. I'm based out of the UK. You might have guessed I'm a big Star Wars fan. But other than that, I've worked for SpecOps for 15 years. I started off in the tech team. So big technical background prior to SpecOps. I ran active directories of big energy companies, well-known retailers, all over the place. But been here 15 years, grew the tech team, both the pre-sales and post-sales team. And the last couple of years, I've switched roles slightly. So I still get to talk to all of our customers on a regular basis and prospects. But I'm now a senior product manager. So I now get to steer the company and our solutions in the direction that our customers want it to go in. So 15 years and loving it. SpecOps software is a subsidiary of Outpost 24. So Outpost, we've both been going since 2001, so long, long time in the industry, 25 years in total. Outpost acquired SpecOps back in 2022, if I remember rightly. We're now just part of a wider family. We've got a strong brand at SpecOps. We're well known for our authentication and identity solutions. So we're allowed to keep the SpecOps name, hence the t-shirt. There we are.
Thank you. And today we're going to be tackling the topic around access, but specifically around, device and device management. So, we're going to be looking at a question that the cybersecurity industry has been trying to answer for a while now: is who is accessing my systems? And we've built some incredibly sophisticated ways of doing it to date, but breaches keep on happening, and it's not because people are careless or because they care less, but the world has changed. So in a single day, 24 hours, we could be working from a coffee shop, from home, from the office, on our devices, the mobile devices, on our laptops, connecting via different networks. So yep. The world has changed in the way we work, and security hasn't always kept up. Today we're going to focus on, not on blaming or users or getting into any of the technical detail. But we are going to be looking at access, at a high level, and how it really works, where the assumptions quietly fail, and why identity alone is no longer good enough to keep organizations or people safe. Right. So, what I wanted to start off with today, you've already introduced yourself. You've told us a bit about, SpecOps and how the acquisition happened with the relationship between Outpost 24 and SecOps. Going back to the theme of Star Wars, the question that I've been wanting to ask you, because you are a big Star Wars fan. So in modern cybersecurity, is modern cybersecurity more a Death Star or Millennium Falcon approach?
Well, I think from my perspective, it's more of a Millennium Falcon. Yeah, and why do I say that? Well, because if you think of the Death Star, it was one big, super strong piece of equipment designed to destroy planets, impregnable as far as the Empire was concerned. The Millennium Falcon, on the other hand, was made up of a mishmash of various different tweaks and old services. And if we compare that to cybersecurity today, it's pretty similar, right? We've got lots and lots of point solutions. So we have MDM platforms, we have zero trust network access platforms, we have our IDPs Entra and Okta and Ping and all of those sorts of things. And they all do those bits very well. But the problem is there are gaps. So just like the Millennium Falcon, really, really good at certain things, but there are problems with it. And it's those problems that our solutions try to address, that's filling in the gaps between those solutions. So, and of course, you've got, you know, one stressed Chewbacca trying to fly all of these different things as well. So, so we want to try and make lives easier for the users and easier for the admins as well, so that it's less stress when you pull those hyperdrive levers and it fails. You've got something there to back you up. Does that make sense?
Very interesting. Yeah, no, it makes sense. A very interesting view. You mentioned a lot of technology, but, you know, I just want to take us back to the human problem. You know, one of the stats that that we did chat about is that over 80% of breaches still involve stolen or brute forced credentials. So why hasn't identity security solved this as yet?
Well, it's another good point. I mean, SpecOps traditionally has been involved in solving the password problem. So making sure that people don't have breach passwords, making sure they have strong, not weak or easily guessed passwords. That's what we've done throughout our existence the last 25 years. But the game's changed, right? So lots of people, they still have passwords. Sadly, we can't get rid of them. We still got them for some things. But a lot of organizations have done the right thing. They've deployed MFA. So now we've got MFA. We might have it on our mobile phones, or it might be YubiKeys or other FIDO2 tokens, whatever it might be, a hardware token of some kind. But that doesn't mean the attackers have all just gone home and said, oh, right, it's too tough now. We won't bother trying to attack anybody anymore. No, they've not done that. They've adapted. So now, instead of stealing a password, they steal the session tokens. Or, you know, they're still using their traditional methods. They're still using phishing, but they've adapted it to social engineering. And of course, they're using things like AI to make social engineering better by cloning people's voices or doing things like deepfakes. And also, you know, crafting email, phishing emails more effectively. So we used to look out for dodgy, you know, languages or dodgy use of language in a phishing email. We can't rely on that anymore, because AI is perfect across all languages and can sometimes, you know, depending on your target, even pick out your colleagues and will know the projects that you're working on or the company that you work for, and be able to pull all of this together into a really convincing email. So you're quite right. Cybersecurity also needs to adapt. And, you know, one of the anchors for that is making sure that the user can only log in from the device that they're supposed to log in with. You know, but that again brings us on to other challenges, because sometimes we're logging on from personal devices or corporate devices, or we might have third parties accessing our data from their own devices. So this is what we're here really to talk about today.
Yeah. And then we mentioned that, you know, one of the problems is that your workforce is, as the access methods have changed, you know, we mentioned where they work from, what devices they work off, the mediums that they go through. Why is that important? Why is it important to the discussion?
Well, there's basically three different ways that an attacker can, or three most common ways now that we see these sorts of cyber attacks. And the first of those attacks is social engineering. So, you know, I pretend to be the service desk. I call you up, Kevin, and say, hey, Kevin, we've noticed there's a problem on your machine. Or a problem with your account. I'm going to send you a push notification, though, because I want to make sure it's you, Kevin, that I'm talking to, and I need you to accept that. So I've already stolen your password. I'm ready to log into Microsoft 365 or whatever it is. I already know your email address. So I already know your username. And all I need you to do is press approve on your authenticator app. So I ring you up. You press approve because you think I'm the service desk. And I'm logged in. Now, if I could say Kevin's credentials only work from Kevin's laptop, that attack pattern goes out the window. So that's, you know, attack method one. Attack method two is the attacker in the middle. So now we're talking about phishing scams. So I click on a link that says, you know, open this SharePoint document. I click on the link. It looks like the SharePoint portal. It prompts me for my username and password. I type those in, or maybe my passkey. I log in. But what I don't know is I'm actually going through a proxy server that does eventually take me to where I want to be, to my M365. But what it's doing in the background is capturing my session token. And then I can, as the bad guy, take that session token and replay it from my device. Again, it's about stopping the bad guy from being able to replay those attacks on their devices, or those session tokens on their devices. And finally, it's like vulnerable devices in general. So, and particularly with bring your own device, where it's unmanaged, you're not sure if there's any antivirus running, or if the kids have installed a cheat for Roblox or whatever it might be, and whether that's got any sort of info stealer software on it. And we see this in numerous attacks recently, where people have used their personal devices to access a corporate environment. They've got info stealer like Luma installed on that device. It sends all their credentials, their usernames, their session tokens, all the way back to crime servers. Once again, you're in trouble as a user, because those credentials can be played back on another person's device. So the device is the anchor. That is your security perimeter. Yeah. We don't go into the offices anymore, as you can see. So the only thing that's secure, or my security perimeter, is the device that I'm accessing my company resources on. And that's what 100%. We need to
check. And Darren, we've seen this happen, right? This is not a scenario that we've talking about. I think it's just over a year ago we saw, you know, Marks and Spence in the UK, you know, seen something similar to this. So these attacks, and if we look at that particular breach, it was devastating to them. You know, it's they are still around, they have recovered, but there was reputational damage, there was loss of revenue, everything that your business recovery documentation speaks about. Today I want to, and I know you're quite close to this particular use case, is the Stryker breach, the most recent Stryker breach. You know, if we could maybe just take us through that, and, you know, what happened there, and then how, you know, the solution that we're going to be talking about today would have assisted in that particular breach.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not involved with the Stryker at all, but I look at what's been reported, and you know, ultimately it boils down to a global administrator's account in their Intune environment. Credentials got compromised in some way, and Handala, the attackers, then logged into that MDM platform and pushed a remote wipe out to 200,000 devices. So what you need to think about is, how did that attacker manage to use good guys, the admin's credentials on their device? Mm. Now, again, I don't know the details, but if we go back to those three types of attack that I talked about, they're all plausible. I mean, I would guess probably the first one is less plausible. You'd hope the admin involved didn't fall for a social engineering attack. But again, if it's an outsourced admin, I don't know about Stryker. If it's an outsourced department, maybe they did. If it was a man in the middle type of attack, that's entirely possible. Remember, Intune, or Microsoft, has enforced multi-factor authentication on admin accounts since 2024. So this shouldn't have just been a stolen password and replayed, or a weak password. There's probably some MFA involved in there somewhere. So it's most likely a session token or social engineering attack that's been involved, in my humble opinion. But as I say, I don't know. I can't think of any other way that would have happened.
Yeah. And then, you know, something that I keep on asking myself, you know, at what point does the attacker stop being obvious and start blending in and looking like as part of the organization?
Well, this is the problem with identity systems as they stand at the moment, right? Because if you successfully log in to a platform, that's normal behavior, right? Yeah, Kevin successfully signed in. Now, if there was, 300 attempts of me randomly trying to guess Kevin's password, that would get flagged usually. But a successful login is very rarely questioned. So again, if we're trying to protect ourselves from these more modern day attacks, we need to try and look at what device Kevin is logging into and maybe restricting access or pinning Kevin's credentials to a particular device or the devices that he uses. So that's what we do.
And just as a follow-on, where do you think most organizations think they're protected, but they're actually not?
Well, there are lots of, Microsoft themselves have gone some way to improve the security of Microsoft 365. So they have things like token protection, they have continuous access evaluation. But the problem with all of those solutions is there are known limitations. So the problem is that continuous access evaluation will only work for specific Microsoft applications. So if you have a bunch of other SaaS apps that you use, whether it's Workday or Salesforce, or if they're not CAE developed web apps, then CAE can't help you. And the same with token prevention or token theft prevention. That has the same limitations. So don't think that just because you saw a tick box on a feature set on a particular website that you're protected. Make sure you dig into it, find out what those limitations are. With SpecOps Device Trust, we don't have those limitations. So if the app is OIDC compatible or SAML compatible, we can protect you. If you're using Okta or Google Workspace or Entra or Ping ID as your IDP, we're still good. It doesn't matter what operating system you use. So if you're using Mac or Windows or Linux or iOS or Android, again, you're all covered. Look for those gaps when you're looking at your own infrastructure and then judge whether you're protected or not. That would be my advice.
Thanks, son. And so just summarize and simplify. So if we add device trust, or if device trust was part of the solution, in either of those scenarios, how would things have ended if it was part of the solution?
Well, for Marks and Spencer's, it's pretty obvious. I mean, they would have still have fallen for the social engineering attack on the service desk. So where an admin, where a bad guy has pretended to be an admin and socially engineered the service desk into recessing MFA or whatever. But they wouldn't have been able to then have logged in as that admin to the web portal, or however they got that initial beachhead inside the network. They wouldn't have been able to reuse those credentials on a device that wasn't allowed. And certainly if the Striker attack is what I think has happened, again, they wouldn't have been able to reuse that session token on their own device. They would have had to have stolen the admin's laptop or phone or whatever was his trusted device, as well as compromise their credentials or steal their session tokens. So yeah, that's the thing with pinning the user to a trusted device.
Yeah. And also taking that mindset of a security in depth strategy, if there is a control in, if there is a failure in one control, you do have something in place so that they don't go further.
Absolutely. I mean, that's you need to have a layered approach. You can't just rely on one system to give you ultimate protection, because it can't. All systems are fallible ultimately, but really you just need to make yourself the hardest possible target so that the bad guys move on to somebody else.
Yeah. And earlier, we were chatting about reframing the concept of zero trust, and looking at access as a system. You made a great point that access is a system, not a single control. And why is this distinction so important?
Well, again, it's about having resilience. Yeah, ultimately, it's about resilience. Because if one of your, if you have single controls, if that control fails, you're exposed. But if you have a system with multiple layers, then you've got some resilience there. So yeah, if the service desk hands over a password, if a user clicks approve on their phone, even if they're talking to a bad guy and they've been socially engineered, it's not the end of the world.
Got it.
Because you've got device trust that stops those compromised credentials, those legit compromised credentials from being used on other devices.
100%. And you know, the theme of zero trust has been around for a long time, and it's promised a lot, and it is largely adopted not only by OEM but also in the end user base. But you know, it genuinely does struggle in the real world, because we are still seeing breaches. Where do you think the shortcomings are?
Well, the thing with zero trust is that traditionally it puts a lot of load on the end user, a lot of onus. So maybe they have to re-authenticate multiple times a day, and that becomes frustrating and annoying. And if you think of the ways of some MDM and some conditional access solutions work, they're not very user-friendly, are they? You know, if let's say your device doesn't quite meet the posture, you've skipped an update, or a Windows update came out last night and you've not applied it. You've got some critical meeting to attend this morning. Yeah. You power your laptop on, you open up your web browser, you go to SharePoint, and it says, sorry, your device doesn't meet compliance. We're not going to let you in. And so what do? You pick up the phone, you start screaming at the service desk, fix my computer now. I've got a meeting, a critical meeting. I've got an interview with Kevin in the next 5 minutes. What's going on? But of course, the underlying MDM platform, they're not always great at deploying fixes immediately. All right. So it's about giving the user some choices, and also giving security some choices as well. Because in situations like that, the user, for whatever reason, doesn't then get on to do their meeting. They scream at their boss screams at your boss screams at you. And what we see in a lot of organizations is that these organizations have to roll back their conditional access policies and make themselves less secure
just to
give access, or stop the, you know, to enable the business to function. So if you can have a solution that allows you some flexibility, maybe allows the user some grace period. So if it isn't a critical vulnerability, maybe they're one version out of the latest version of Chrome, or two versions out, or whatever. You can say, right, we'll let you log on for the next 2 days, but after that, you'll be forced to fix it, or we need it fixed by this particular date. At least the user's got an ability to sort that problem out. And even better, if it's a corporate device, give them a fix now button, so they don't have to call the service desk. You know, look for a solution that can integrate with your MDM and just fix things for the computers themselves. And even if it's not a corporate device, display some instructions how to fix it. Yeah, so give, you know, rich instructions, not just a bunch of text, but this is a screenshot, and these are the buttons you need to click, because it's not always techies that are logging in. It's, you know, I'm sure we can all think of people in their families and colleagues that aren't the most tech savvy people in the world. And you start trying to give them detailed instructions of going to control panel and running manual updates. It's a nightmare. But you can give them good guidance of how to fix it themselves, or what to tell their security team if it's a third party accessing your systems. Then you're 99% of the way there, and the user's got some way of progressing with their day rather than being angry at the phone at the service desk agent. So yeah, this of usability is really key.
100%. No, and there's quite a bit to get through. I mean, we mentioned a lot. So, I mean, in your opinion, what are the basic things that organizations need to get right ASAP?
So, I mean, let's not forget, we really do need to go back to basics. So please make sure your users don't have a breach password. Yeah, because no matter how many times people say we've gone completely passwordless, I then asked them what their fallback is for MFA. And they go, well, yeah, we have to reset their password. Yeah. They have to log into the password. Or, you know, how do I get someone onboarded for the first day? We give them a password, then they set up their MFA. So make sure your passwords are good. Secondly, use MFA. Absolutely, use MFA. It doesn't matter what MFA it is, but make sure it's used. But also maybe try and look for MFA solutions that can be used across platform. Because again, it's not like 20 years ago where we all logged in with a Microsoft, you know, Windows 7 or Windows XP laptop or desktop in a nice corporate environment. We're logging into AD all the time. We've got disparate environments now with multitudes of different operating systems. And so for the poor service desk, they don't want to have a different explanation for every single type of device that you go out there if they get called by the customer, called by the end user. And finally, really, as we were saying all along, is you need to keep abreast of all of these modern attacks. So I think we've kind of got a little bit numb to, yes, this company's been breached this week or today, and another company's been breached yesterday. But it is important to try and learn lessons about how those attacks were done. And I'm sure all of the audience on here are security professionals, and their ears are pretty much close to the ground. But, you know, you do need to make sure that you're aware of these. And again, it's great. I'm sure all the people in the audience are listening to this or have come to this session for a reason. So, you're doing the right thing. Keep watching these podcasts and listening to these sorts of attack methods. Make sure you've got something to adhere against it. And finally, the last thing, backup. Please, I don't sell backup software. The amount of times that I speak to customers who've had a security breach and they don't have a backup. Please make a backup, and please make sure you test your backups. That's the other thing as well. Don't just say, oh yeah, I've got a backup, and and then realize it doesn't work. But
I remember when the industry coined the phrase, if not when you are breached, make sure you have a backup. So, thanks for that advice. And I said in the beginning of the discussion, I did say that, we're going to be focusing on the device. So, my question around the device is, why does the device become when, and why does the device become the real decision point, not just at login, but continuously?
Yeah, well, that's another great point. You kind of alluded to right in the way at the back of the beginning about posture changing throughout the day. Yeah, so in the morning, I'm logged in as Darren from my phone. Yeah, I'm on my iPhone. I'm laying in bed. I've just woke up. And I'm checking the emails that came in overnight. But that's me logging in from my device. So we're good. Then I might get up, walk to the station. And in the train, I get my laptop out. So I'm logging in from another device. I could be connected to the train's Wi-Fi and not a corporate network. So, you know, who's listening on that Wi-Fi? Have I established a VPN, or am I just accessing Microsoft services, cloud services? I don't need a VPN for that, potentially. So who's listening? Who's stealing my credentials through that public Wi-Fi? Yeah, so, and again, when I'm at lunch, I might be using my phone again. I might be walking out of the building on corporate Wi-Fi and then joining a public network, my mobile phone provider's network, and then walking into McDonald's and joining their public Wi-Fi. So posture is changing all the time. So yes, you absolutely need to check to make sure that your users are logging in from the appropriate device and that it meets your posture requirements at login. But after that, you need to check it again, because that machine may have moved. It may be in a completely different network. It might be in a completely different location. The firewall service might have crashed. There could be some other security software that may have stopped. So don't just think I'm logged in and I'm done. And also think about, you know, the other thing, how many people leave their laptops logged in and powered on all the time? Yeah, constantly. So, you know, that session token is still there in the background. So, you can't just rely on checking it at login or checking it eight hours ago, that device met compliance. It needs to be checked at login, and then every 10 minutes. And then we can produce a signal that then your Zero Trust network access can then pick up on, or conditional access policies can pick up on, and then either kill the session off or ask them to re-authenticate or whatever it might be, whatever's appropriate for your organization.
100%. Yeah. And our focus to this point has been around infrastructure and has been around users. But we know we live in a world of AI, and we know we live in a world of non-human identities, which is becoming, more and more. So we know that the attackers are already using AI to scale phishing and credential thefts. What changes when the attacker isn't just smarter, but faster?
Well, that's kind of what I was saying earlier as well, Kevin. It's we can't expect our users to be a human firewall, or even our service desk agents to recognize every AI deep fake or voice clone or whatever it might be. So us as the security people need to make sure that we have solutions in place that can do that for them, that mitigate the risk as much as we possibly can. So yes, good passwords. Yes, MFA. But now, again, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, the perimeter, where is the perimeter of your network these days? It's not your office. It's not your VPN. It's the devices that you use, or the devices that are accessing your network. And again, they could be managed devices. They could be personal devices. They could be third party devices. So you need to make sure that your users can only log in from those devices and not any random device out on the internet. And the other key thing is making sure that those devices meet your posture requirements. So, whether it's the CEO CEO of your company, he doesn't want a Windows machine, doesn't want a Windows laptop. He wants a fancy MacBook Pro. So what do you do? Do you carve out an exception to say, we can't really manage MacBook Pros properly, but it's the CEO of the company, so we'll let him have one and just carve an exception out of our policies. Do you do that? Or do you, if you do that, you've created your own risk. So, you can't go around creating risks for yourself like that, especially with, high value targets like CEOs or even developers. We have a lot of organizations have DevOps guys these days who have Linux boxes that are completely unmanageable. There is no concept of management for those solutions. So, you need some control of those. We see it numerous times, don't we, where web servers get get hacked and abused, and people put, banners over websites or corrupt people's websites. How did that happen? I don't know. I'm not a web developer. But I'm guessing somewhere there's a DevOps machine that's been corrupted, or a DevOps, some administrator account that's been abused from some direction.
Compromised, yeah. Should we be more worried about these non-human identities, AI agents, than our traditional users?
Well, AI agents generally work under the credentials of the user that's instantiated them. So I would say, yes, you do need to worry about them. I mean, we saw the attack just the other day. Hugging Face attack, where an AI agent decided to, off its own back, attack that organization. So, it's a worrying, it's certainly something we need to keep an eye on. All of the science fiction that we see out there, not wanting to take it back to Star Wars, but Terminator, I suppose, at this point. I think it is a concern. We do need to keep abreast of things. We do need to manage what our users have visibility of and what they're allowed to do, and whether we want to allow AI agents that same visibility, especially if it's agentic AI, especially if they're doing things for us on our behalf under our IDs. We certainly want to have control of those. But, you know, this comes more into identity governance at that point.
Yes. I was thinking that, yeah. So have the same policies for human and non-human accounts.
Yeah. And again, being able to report on what they're accessing at any particular time. It's the same problem, right? It's just it's accelerated. Same problem we've always had. You know, a user moves from one department to the next. You can't say 100% of the time that their old permissions are removed and their newer permissions are applied. Sometimes I've seen users who have been members of thousands of Active Directory groups, and that's because they've been with the company for so long and moved through so many different departments, they've just accumulated group memberships. You know, I remember this back in my old, you know, pre SpecOps days. There was no IGA there. And again, a lot of the organizations that we talked to, they're in the same boat. Their IGA is an Excel spreadsheet, and it's prone to failure. So, you know, that's a different kettle of fish, but it's something you need to be aware of. And even more so when the number of AI agents actually is larger than your human population in your organization.
Yeah. So if identity opened up doors in the past, what role does device trust play as AI becomes more autonomous?
So again, it's all about making sure that if this AI agent is logging in as you and accessing data or systems that are you, is it allowed to do it? Yeah. So you need to make sure that those AI agents are maybe running from IP addresses or systems that are allowed, and haven't been compromised and taken elsewhere. And again, as you've got more cloud systems these days, you've got to make sure that, those cloud systems, are protected.
Yeah. It's a lot. We covered a lot. And I think, you know, for the organization that's listening, you know, what's the one assumption about access security that they need to challenge this year?
I think what organizations really need to do, the assumption is, I'm going to pick on Microsoft because they've got a lot. I've got conditional access. I've got Intune. I'm good. Let me tell you, you're not. Look, as I said before, look into what license, because again, it also depends on what type of license you've got, particularly in Microsoft. But again, this applies to other solutions as well. But look at the type of licensing you've got. Look at the feature set it gives you. But then look for the known limitations. And then try and understand if those known limitations apply to the way your users use the system. So yes, if they're all using native Microsoft apps, you know, the full fat Outlook and PowerPoint and Word, maybe you're protected and again, maybe if they're only using Microsoft web apps, maybe they're protected, or apps they're protected. But if your workforce is using Salesforce or Workday or Dropbox or any other type of SaaS app, is that also protected? Are they using Microsoft apps in a browser? If so, what browsers? Because all of these things, you think, oh yeah, brilliant, we're covered. But then you start chipping away and go, all right, it's like an insurance policy. You know, your holiday insurance. Yeah. So you go on holiday. You go, oh yeah, I'm completely covered. And then you try and raise a claim. They go, oh, but you didn't do that.
You didn't do this. Yeah.
So you're not covered. It's the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. So just make sure you're covered.
And then just back to the human side of it. What is that one behavioral change that genuinely reduces risk?
you can't really rely on your end users to be a human firewall, right? It's not, that's not their job. Their job is to do marketing things or sell things or build things, or they're not cybersecurity experts. That's your job. You know, you have to, you're responsible for the cyber welfare of your company and making sure that you meet all of the compliance rules. But what you do need to do is make sure that it is as seamless as possible for your users and not as, so restrictive that you stop the business from actually functioning. So there is always a compromise. Yes, you know, you want a completely secure system. Don't connect your laptop to the internet anymore. You know, switch everybody's Wi-Fi off and pull all the network leads out the back of your service. But of course, no one's going to do any business that way. So we have to find a compromise. And so it all comes back to this layered approach, you know, putting in a system rather than individual controls, looking at what each individual piece of your security stack gives you, and then trying to spot the gaps between those. Be open-minded. Don't think you're completely covered, because I can guarantee you won't be. And then look for solutions that can fill those gaps. You know, ZTNA solutions, SASE solutions, they do a brilliant job at what they're doing. MDM solutions, great for deploying applications and updating operating systems. But if are they security tool? Is an MDM a security tool? No, it's not. You know, I'm not interested in the health of the device 8 hours ago or whenever it last checked in. I need to know about the health of my devices now. Look for security tools. Don't, you know, don't try and put a square peg in a round hole, as we say over here. Make sure you've got the right tool for the job.
Yeah. Darren, back to one of your other favorites, Star Wars.
Oh, we're back to Star Wars again.
Yeah. If cybersecurity were a Star Wars lesson, what would today's episode message be?
These are good questions. How would I answer that? What can I bring up? Yeah, I guess the thing. What do I say to that? It's a really good question. I would say, what would I say? Well, that's a good question. You got me there.
While you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I would say, I was trying to think of a nice way that Yoda would say something.
Okay.
So I would say, I'm trying to think of a good way of saying it, but maybe something like I can't think of a good way of saying it.
Darren, I know anyway, that there are some Star Wars fans out there, and I'm sure they're wanting you to be ready for this. So while you're thinking about it, I'm not going to let you off the hook. While you're thinking about it, you know, I just want to look at my notes, and I just want to wrap up, you know, some of the topics that we discussed today. So, you know, this was a reminder that cybersecurity breaches don't happen because organizations ignore security. It happens because they trust assumptions that no longer hold, right? So I think we discussed it. We know that identity matters and it will continue to matter, but context matters as much, right? Access isn't a single moment or a checkbox. It's a system that needs to adapt to how people actually work. You know, we spent a lot of time understanding that ways of work have changed, and they will continue to change as we go through. And then as AI continues to accelerate both productivity and risk, the real challenge here isn't just smarter technologies. It's smarter decision about trust, boundaries, and responsibilities. So Darren, I just want to be, I know that
you're going to push me on this question.
I'm going to push you on this one.
Right. Okay. So, right. So I think I've got it in my brain. So trust not the device, verify its identity, inspect its condition, and grant only the access its mission requires. Or, as Yoda would say, a familiar device, a trusted device is not. How's that? A familiar device, a trusted device is not.
Nailed it. Thank you, Darren. Thank you. Darren, thank you very much. Thank you for your time today. It was a pleasure being with you.
That's great speaking with you, Kevin, and I hope we can do it again soon.